starting now, we're not to blink. If you blink, we go back to the start. Do you often think about how inconsequential you are?
No.
Do you believe that God will save you from your own ridiculousness?
No.
Have you ever had intercourse with someone inside your family?
Yes.
Have you ever had intercourse with someone inside your family?
Yes.
Who?
My auntie.
Have you killed anyone?
No.
Maybe?
Not me.
Have you killed anyone?
No.
How many times did you have intercourse with your aunt?
3 times.
Where's your aunt now?
I don't know.
Would you like to have intercourse with her again?
No.
Do you regret this?
No.
Where's your mother?
I don't know, Lucy.
Infringement.
Fuck!
Back to the start.
Okay.
Do you often think about how inconsequential you are?
Yes.
Do you believe that God will save you?
No.
Have you ever had sex with a member of your family?
Yes.
Are you lying?
No.
Who?
Auntie Bertha.
Where's your aunt now?
I don't know, maybe home.
Are you lying?
No.
Are you a liar?
Yes.
Have you killed anyone?
Yes.
Who?
Japs in a war.
Do you regret this?
No.
What are you running from?
Maybe hurt a man, I think. Maybe he's dead, I don't know.
Where?
In Salinas, he stole a batch of my booze and he drank it.
Does this booze you make poison?
Not if you drink it, smart.
Are you trying to poison me?
No.
Where's your father?
Dead.
How did he die?
Drunk.
Where's your mother? Where's your mother?
Loony bin.
She's psychotic.
Yes.
What is the name of your aunt?
Bertha.
How did you come to have sex with your auntie Bertha?
I was drunk and she looked good.
And you did it again and again?
Yes.
Have you ever had bad thoughts about Master Peggy?
Yes.
What did you think?
I thought you were fools.
Am I a fool to you?
No, sir.
If you were locked in a room for the rest of your life, who would be in there with you?
Doris.
Who's Doris?
Best girl I ever met, girl I'm gonna marry one day.
Is she in Lynn?
Yes.
Lynn, Massachusetts?
Yes, sir.
Then why aren't you with her?
I'm an idiot.
Why aren't you with that lovely girl?
I got no reason, I'm a fool.
Do you love Doris?
Yes.
Is she the love of your life?
Yes, sir.
Why aren't you with her?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. Tell me why you're not with her if you love her so much.
I told her I'd come back and I never went back and now I gotta get back to her.
Why don't you go back?
I don't know.
Why don't you go
back? I don't know!
Close your eyes.
You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams, and in this episode, we are taking a look at the 2012 Paul Thomas Anderson film, The Master. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Ben Teed.
Hello!
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And we are also sponsored by Audible. For you, the listeners of Plain Label Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to check them out. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Again, that is audibletrial.com/plainlabel for your free audiobook. All right, let's do a little drink roll call action. Mr. Teed, what are you having this fine evening?
I think I've had this before. But
it's a hard cider.
It is a hard cider. It's by Blake's. I've definitely had this before on the show, I think, because I had to explain to you how much I love the movie The Witch. Yes. And it's Black Phillip on the side of the can. Would you like to live deliciously? Cranberry and orange hard cider. And it's really, really good. It's become one of my favorite hard ciders that Blake's does. What are you drinking tonight?
I am going with something that is a little bit diabolical, especially for the time of evening that I'm having it. I'm having a Red Bull and a vodka. All right, and with that, I think we're ready to discuss our film this evening. Benjamin, our film is from 2012. It is Paul Thomas Anderson's follow-up to his Oscar-winning There Will Be Blood. It is The Master.
There will be people on the outside who will not understand the condition you men have. Now upon your shoulders rests the responsibility of a post-war world.
And smile.
You can start a business, filling station, grocery, or hardware store. Get a few acres of land and raise some chickens.
You have a break coming?
10 minutes.
If the average civilian had been through the same stresses that you have been through, undoubtedly, they too would have developed the same nervous condition.
You must understand. You want to get the lights back. How did I get down here?
You're acting aggressive because you drank too much alcohol.
What do you do?
I am a writer, a doctor, a nuclear physicist, a theoretical philosopher. But above all, I am a man, just like you.
He's been writing all night. You seem to inspire something in him.
What we will do now will urge you toward existence within a group, society, or family.
Good science, by definition, allows for more than one opinion. Otherwise, you merely have the will of one man, which is the basis of cult.
And this is where we are at. To have to explain ourselves. For what? The only way to defend ourselves is to attack.
You know, you should wake up, Val. Your father's speaking. You might learn something.
He's making all this up as he goes along. You don't see that?
I wonder how he got here and what he's after. Is it really all so easy that he just came across us?
You are an everlasting spirit, Freddy.
I don't believe you. You make this up. I know you're trying to calm me down, but just say something that's true!
Are you thoughtless in your remarks? Do your past failures bother you? Is your life a struggle? Is your behavior erratic? What are you running from?
He's dangerous. And he will be our undoing if we continue to have him here.
If we are not helping him, then it is we who have failed him.
Perhaps he's past help. Or insane.
And the IMDb plot synopsis goes like this, and this one's a long one, so buckle up. Following his discharge from the U.S. Navy after World War II, Freddie Quell is having difficulties adjusting to non-military life, partially due to his war experiences in the tropics. He has a violent temper, he's obsessed with sex, which is partly why he can't and won't commit to his teenaged girlfriend Doris Solstad, and he is an alcoholic, drinking primarily concoctions he creates himself with dangerous ingredients. It is these factors in combination that lead him to being fired from one job after another, from department store portrait photographer to cabbage picker. Wandering one night in 1950 while drunk, he stumbles upon a yacht being used by Lancaster and Peggy Dodd, the yacht aboard which their daughter Elizabeth will get married. I'll reiterate that I do not write these. Feeling a connection to the stranger, Lancaster invites Freddy to stay aboard to work. In addition to that work, Lancaster indoctrinates him into his cult named The Cause, which purports to do things as varied as cure serious maladies and create world peace. Peggy, Elizabeth, and Elizabeth's husband Clark all subscribe to and support Lancaster's teachings. The only one of the Dodd family that doesn't is Lancaster and Peggy's son, Val Dodd, who believes his father is just making things up as he goes along. Because of being lost psychologically, Freddy is very easy prey. He is looking for someone or something to guide him to a higher plane. But as Freddy travels with the Dodd family as they spout the gospel, he and the Dodds may become at odds with each other if Freddy cannot or does not find from them and the cause what he needs in life to survive emotionally. Yikes. Okay. Mr. Teed.
At odds with the Dodds.
Odds with the Dodds. I like that too. That was like one of the few clever moments there. Why don't you tell me your... the first time around, I guess, with you and the Master and your original... thoughts and what you thought this time around.
At this point, in 2012, it would have been the winter of 2012, when this movie came out. I was already familiar with Paul Thomas Anderson. I knew what I was gonna get. I knew what I was in for, having seen There Will Be Blood a few times. I take my wife and we both go to see this film. I hear all the great things about Philip Seymour Hoffman. This is his film. This is the whole thing. We get to the end of it and we're like, what the hell did we just watch? What is this? And I remember liking it, but I also remember going, I'm not sure how I feel about it, or I'm not sure if I ever have seen a film like this. And so I probably avoided watching it for a little while. Once again, it's one of those that you don't just pop in, you know, and oh, I'm going to watch The Master. Like, you know, yep. It's like a meal. You have to prepare for it and everything. But once you kind of go through it a few times and maybe do a little bit of reading up on maybe also 2012, I may not have been as aware of certain aspects of what PTA is pulling from
Like the Scientology in our reality stuff.
Pretty much, yes. I don't think at that point I knew quite what that was. I don't think I would have really understood it until two things. One, Going Clear from HBO.
Yes.
Helped a lot. And actually, having seen The Master first and then watching Going Clear, it actually helped it a lot of things. It made everything pretty clear in Going Clear. Also, the South Park episode of Scientology. But anyways, we'll skip over that one. But there is a... Now that we've gotten to the point where it's a little bit more popularized, I guess, in terms of knowing what it is and knowing some things about Scientology, it was much easier to kind of understand some motivations. This is taking place in 50?
40, yeah, 1950s.
1950, okay. Right. So, it's very easy to see, it was John Huston. I can't remember the name of the documentary, but it was like all of these, PTSD vets from World War II and how to go back into, the normal working world. And some of them had been in some really awful theaters of war, that were very traumatic and caused a lot of them to become more violent. Greatest Generation, is the name given to, the men and women who were in World War II, but also, it obviously, I mean, all war affects people, but at the same time, Freddy is just this, is this this really awful person, but he's not, he's almost like half a person. It's like not really quite there. He's definitely a sociopath. But on the opposite end of that, I didn't really understand the duality yet. Like, Freddy is to Lancaster Dodd as Eli Sunday is to Daniel Plainview in the last film. But you also have other characters working. I would almost say there's almost a trifecta here with Amy Adams, her character as Lady Macbeth. I mean, Peggy Dodd. excuse me. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. But there is like this, like, this is probably the first time having come out of this film or come at this film where I really noticed Amy Adams this time, like way more than I had ever before with this film. Mostly because I thought the relationship between Lancaster and Freddie Quell are just, they're so magnetized to each other. It's like almost one wants to be the other, or one wishes they could get away with what the other person gets away with. So I just kind of came away from the film before going, I have no idea what this was trying to say to me. And then I kind of just, no, you know what? No, I understood it. It was just a character sketch. It was just put into a situation, where they could just act together, and that's what it was. It doesn't have to be about anything, you know? And that's how I left it back in 2012. 2018 is a little bit different. I can obviously see a lot of those movements now and a lot of the types of things that are being said. So I'm, and I also, this is the last Paul Thomas Anderson film that I have seen. So I have not seen anything past this. And part of me wants to say, I thought about it today. I'm like, why didn't I ever go see Inherent Vice or Phantom Thread in theaters? I mean, they were there. I could have seen them. It's very clear. Like, part of me was like, I'm very sad and very angry and feel cheated that we don't get any more Philip Seymour Hoffman directed scenes from Paul Thomas Anderson. But if you were to end with any film for Philip Seymour Hoffman, this is it. This is the end all be all Philip Seymour Hoffman performance for me. So that's my, like, coming away from it then, coming away from it now, I obviously feel much different from it. I love it a lot more. I don't know. I it's so close to the peak for me that I don't know. On one day I might put The Master first, and one day I might put There Will Be Blood first. I don't know. It's very interesting how my thoughts just change very quickly on these two films. What about you? So this is your first time?
So this is my first time watching it. I watched, I watched maybe around a half of it a week or so ago. And I could tell, like, I was really just sort of fighting the movie. Like, I wasn't just sitting and watching the movie. I was trying to, like, analyze it instead of just watch it. And so then I was like, no, this is not good. And so then when we were going to record the first time around, after I got that text from you, I was like, okay, so I'm just going to put this away for a couple days, and then I'm just going to start it over and try it just brand new, and I'm going to just watch it from the beginning. And so this was the first time I watched it from start to finish, and this is the first time we're going to have a disagreement, because I didn't really care for it. I didn't really like it. I thought that there were moments of it that are all-time Paul Thomas Anderson moments. I think there are performances, specifically Philip Seymour Hoffman, that is outstanding. Now, what it amounts to, I don't know that I've really been able to decipher yet. Like, I think that there's a lot of good things in the movie, but the overall, like, did I enjoy it? Not really. Did I appreciate the craftsmanship and the sort of filmmaking of it all? Absolutely. But I don't know what it is. I think maybe it's, I know that the first time I watched it, for sure, I came off of watching Daniel Plainview, and then I get Freddie Quell, and I'm like, ooh, man, do I not like this Freddie Quell character. Because as bad as Daniel Plainview is, I can still sort of be like, God, look at how awesome he is at being bad. Or like, look at how successful he is at being such an ass. To where then I watch Freddie Quell and I'm like, I'm one of the sailors while he's fucking the sand woman. To where I'm just like, oh God, this fucking guy. And like, oh, this is so uncomfortable. And I liked that I got to see that scene a second time, because the first time I was like, whoa, what the hell? Like, this is going on like too long, right? Ooh. And then he just keeps doing different things to her. And I'm like, at first, you know, when he's doing that, I was like, oh, okay, I probably know some guys that I used to hang out with in college that would do something like this. And then he keeps going, and then he keeps doing different stuff to her. And I'm like, oh, no, this is ridiculous. What the hell? And then getting a chance to see it, that scene the second time, go and watching everyone around him, and they're like, oh geez, not this again, or they're like, what is this guy doing? And being able to sort of see it the second time really helped me appreciate that particular scene. But just seeing this character who I didn't find to be charming, I didn't find to be I didn't hope for him. You know, I didn't want him to find his peace or to be whole or to even to like ruin the cause or to be part of the cause. Like, I just didn't know what to make of him. And he just struck me as a guy like, God, I would never want to be around this person ever. And I just kept thinking like, I don't even like this guy. And I can't fully appreciate the film personally when the main guy I just wouldn't want anything to ever do with. Like, I appreciate that it's well constructed and really well made. And I think that Joaquin Phoenix Although there are times at the beginning when he's doing the sort of one mouth talking that are a little shaky. Overall, he's does really good at that for, you know, only just like being this character. But it, but I don't know. I just kind of didn't really like it that much. And I was like, oh man, I know Ben loves this. And so this will be interesting. But so this is like officially the first one where we disagree pretty significantly on what we think of the movie.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess now that I look at it, I'm starting to go, yeah, I don't know. Like, this one is a little bit more mixed in terms of, like, just general reviews. I think some people either really, really love it or they're just kind of, I can appreciate it, but I don't know what it is. I might take a few more viewings for me to really understand it and see it, but it is one of those that, that lends itself for that. I just see this duality again with Lancaster Dodd and with Freddie Quell. And Freddie is just, he drinks like the fluid that comes out of a missile or what, like a torpedo or something like that. He's a sex addict, I think. I think it's very clear that the Rorschach test that he gets, he's just like, oh, that's what that is. That's what, you know, he's like naming off all the different things that he thinks that it is, and it's the same exact thing. He's a one-track mind. He writes, "Do you want to fuck?" on a piece of notebook paper and holds it up to the lady when they're transcribing
the book or whatever.
They're trying to write it down, and then she just kind of smiles and oh you and like it's this outsider trying to be a part of a family, and like. And this family is a much larger family, and family has always been a theme throughout all of Paul Thomas Anderson's films.
Right.
And a lot of tropes in Paul Thomas Anderson films, and I think just films in general, is if you go against the family, it's usually a bad thing. It's usually a bad sign. And he doesn't really ever kind of become part of the family. He's more of like the family dog, and like a bulldog or some sort of like bad dog that they sick on people. Not that Lancaster Dodd has to sick on people, but one that is just this loyal dog that will go and rip someone apart to anybody that says no or questions the cause. And there's this just wonderful duality with these two, but I think there's a third element that I might be missing with Amy Adams' character and Peggy Dodd, and she obviously believes in Lancaster's cause and stuff like that. I don't know about that. I don't think I would even argue maybe she doesn't, because I think it's all about control. I think it's all about making sure that Lancaster Dodd stays in control because they'll listen to him. But as it becomes very clear at the end of the film, she is very much the one in control. She's the one in control of Lancaster Dodd.
She's definitely in charge. Yeah, she's definitely in charge.
She literally has him by some body
by
part.
By the unmentionables, yes.
She's got him by that. And the moment things start turning very sour with Freddie Quell, it is time for her to get rid of Freddie. It is time for her to find a way to get rid of him. So she appeals to Lancaster in a very interesting way and tells him that he must get rid of him because he will destroy all that we've worked for. And it's very important that, you know, that he is not a part of our future plans and stuff like that. So there's this really elaborate mirror film happening here that didn't happen in There Will Be Blood. The very end scene with, and I know I'm jumping to the end, sorry, but I just want to kind of show the duality of these two films because there is a father figure in Lancaster Dodd, much like Daniel Plainview is, and H.W. is more of a Joaquin, Freddie Quell, character that is being pretty much cast out. HW is doing it willingly. He knows that his father will be pissed, and he will not like it. But with Philip Seymour or Lancaster Dodd, he almost has to be like, "Look, Freddie, like, I'll meet you if I ever see you in another life. We'll be enemies or whatever." And then he sings in that Slow Boat to China song, and it's almost and the way Freddie looks at him, it's not it is a I'll see you later, like it, like goodbye type of thing. And Freddie just goes back to being Freddie in some ways. He goes after the fast and loose women, like he did when he was a photographer at the mall. He makes all sorts of weird drinks and is just a terrible human being. But this time
his jug juice is what that was called, yes, that they was making with the gas. Yeah.
Ugh. And that's when he ends up, he's in England, and he finds a lady and they have, after they have sex, he starts to try to do this interview scene.
Yeah.
The same interview, like close your eyes, you know,
don't blink or whatever.
Yeah. Or yeah, that's what it was. Recall a word. And then he says it. And then, you know, what do you hear? Who's saying that? You know, what's going on? And I think it's all predicated on, like, I don't necessarily think there's one, like, focus. I know you focus on Freddie a lot and you follow him and you follow his story mostly. And yeah, he's not, I mean, both times you're introduced to him, the film is bookended with him doing crude things. Like,
yeah,
he's obviously, like, with the weird sand lady that they make. And then also, I think he says, like, his last line of the film's like, put it back in before it goes soft.
Yeah.
So he's a very crude guy, and the movie begins and ends with his crudeness. But in some ways, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to find a more bigger, deeper meaning to the master and whatnot. But honestly, I might be coming up short just because I, you know, it's just one of those things where I just feel like I came away from this one and it just made sense. Like, but not nearly as much.
Oh,
sense
sure.
As
yeah.
There Will Be Blood would have been.
Well, I think its goal is different because in There Will Be Blood, in it, the first of what we had called his, like, more adult film sort of attempts, I guess, where he's striving for a little bit more, he had that goal that we talked about where it was religion and commerce. And here, it's more of, like, post-World War II's male mentality versus this sort of this cult, this sort of, like, listless, aimless men versus this, even though it may be crazy, this indoctrination of this religion and believing in this man who knows all of these things, and that being something that is suitable or appropriate for the confused and nervous, they call them, with people that have PTSD in the movie. People that are nervous should follow this charismatic leader, as opposed to going to, like, a more, like, straight religious kind of a deal. So I don't know, like, it just seemed like it was a fairly straight line of commerce versus religion, and here there's just all of these loose ends that I didn't come away from the movie thinking, oh, okay, that was structured in a way that Freddie had a character arc from being X and now he's Y. It just seemed like he tried this thing out and it didn't really work for him, and he was the same. And then he was, you know, I took it as him joking when he was sort of mid-coital, I'll call it, with a woman and at the end. And so he had that, and then we have Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, who is, like, he's famous at the beginning, it seems, but then has the release of his second book, and then people start challenging him, and we get those views of, is he really this knowledgeable guy, because even Laura Dern's character starts questioning the adjustments that he made in his book compared to what they usually go by and what does that mean. And so I guess I just didn't really know what he was going for. And I think that that's the thing that really, above all else, holds me back, is because I couldn't put a finger on what it was about. Like, if someone said, hey, what's The Master about? I'd say, well, Scientology. And it is, but it's like, it's not like Freddie Quell learns a lesson and learns, oh, okay, this is all bullshit. And it's not a pro-Scientology movie either. It just kind of is there, and he kind of goes about his life afterwards the same as he did before. So it's like, well, he didn't really learn anything, did he? And Lancaster Dodd didn't really learn anything throughout the movie. And we see Amy Adams being in charge just more overtly than we did at the beginning of the movie. And they, you know, in the synopsis that I read, it talked about how Val Dodd, the child, is the one who doesn't believe. And we do get that one scene on the porch where he says, you know, he's just making this up as he goes. And I thought that that was potentially a really powerful scene, because, you know, Freddy freaks out and the cops show and this, that, and the other. But I never felt that there was any sort of animosity between the son and the father, because he's like, yeah, he just makes it up. But he'll continue to sit there and live off all of the money that his dad makes from it. So I don't know. I just kind of felt like I didn't get it, I think, is ultimately what it boils down to. Like, there's all these little threads that I'm trying to grasp onto. And like, I'm sincerely not trying to say, well, your enjoyment of the movie is incorrect. I just didn't get it, is what it makes me feel like.
Maybe, and I can't blame you for feeling that way, because I too am just like, I'm having a problem finding a clear drive or destination to where this film is trying to go. But I think it really kind of works, though, for the film to have that, because since this is I will just go ahead and say, I think it's from Freddy's point of view. They show a lot more introspective shots of him, and you're almost looking at Lancaster Dodd from low angles, and you're looking up to him like he is your master.
Yes,
you are the dog. You are
absolutely
you are the...
Well, they do call him master, so yes. You know that it is definitely Freddy looking to Philip Seymour Hoffman.
So
for
because
sure.
It's from Freddy's point of view, I think it totally makes sense, not the film, but for the film to be rambly and weird and unconventional, and it's a turbulent film. It's a very troubled life Freddy lives. Like, he's not okay. He's definitely not okay. And that's all expressed through one just amazing scene. It's like the scene of the film, really, for me, is the interview scene.
Oh, absolutely. Now that is such a good scene.
Right. And I think that is kind of like the point of, like, where the hell are you going with these questions? It's not so much where are you going with these questions, Lancaster Dodd, but I've noticed now in this viewing, it's more about control. It's more about staying in control, and it's more about manipulating Freddy, who's very easy to make mad. And so it's like Lancaster is certainly a master. He's certainly a master at making simpletons like Quell, who have this like almost ability to just attract trouble wherever he goes. And also, like, it's so clear too that they're attracted to each other. And they're fascinated by each other, and it's unmistakable. But at the same time, I just feel like Freddy is also extremely frail. Like, you cannot, you can't, they're both, I think, very frail, but Freddy specifically, because he talks about, oh gosh, what is her name? It's he goes, who's if you could be locked in a room,
his girlfriend.
Yeah, if you could be locked in a room for the rest of your life, who would it be? And he says her name. Then he goes, who is that? And he goes, it's this girl. Nobody. It's this girl I know. I'm not with her, and I left her, and now I need to be with her. I need to go back with her again. Like, I can't really do a great impression of Freddie Quill, but like there is this like wailing that he does at the very end. That he is just, he needs to get back to this one part in his life that he failed at. And ultimately he does when he's kicked out of the family. And he's just incapable. And even at his own job where all he's got to do is take photos of portraiture of people, he's just really bad at that too. And he finds ways to just be a jerk. And I don't know what it is, But I guess there is this, like, I don't know. There's just this control that I think Hoffman's character likes over mm-hmm. Quell. And it's just like, I don't know. Intellect and instinct both together in a film, and you're watching them do evil things. You know, and is Lancaster Dodge truly evil? I mean, he doesn't like kill anybody. He doesn't cause anything to happen, but it is extremely interesting to watch his family dynamics. Like, I was just, mm-hmm. I just love watching, some guy at a random party that Laura Dern throws. And they're all talking about the new book coming out, blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, but like, this guy's definitely was prepared. Like, he was seeking out this argument, though.
Yeah,
that guy.
Yeah, exactly. He was coming up to him and he was saying, listen, I want to talk to you about what you thought, or I want to have an actual conversation with you. And Dodd just loses his temper. And of course, Freddy throws the whatever piece of food or whatever at him or whatever, because he's a gargoyle pretty much.
Because he's an animal, yeah. He calls him an animal, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly. He's an animal. But the thing that was so good was watching the family members, specifically Amy Adams, just like her gaze is just like,
well,
oh my gosh.
she was ready to murder that guy.
Yeah. The look on her face was, if word gets out, it will fall apart and we will no longer be in control. And so we mm-hmm. need to be better. We need to push. And so I was almost kind of, if I have a criticism about the film, I'd say put more Amy Adams in there, man. She was just so warm and loving and had this great, like, and she was perpetually pregnant, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. And so it was
well,
just
well, I don't
fantastic.
Know that she's ever been, she's probably never been bad in anything. I mean,
no,
she's
yeah.
always so good.
Oh my gosh, yeah. How many times have we seen her, I mean... Yeah, I mean,
well,
I
mean,
the one
even
that comes
even
to...
in things that we just recently saw, like rewatching episodes of The Office and having her play this like former cheerleader, like ultra preppy and ditzy kind of girl, and then watching something like Arrival, where she's very much the opposite of that, and you know, from those roles to something like The Fighter, which I don't particularly like that movie, but I think that she's very good in it. She's like it. I know that Hollywood likes to put labels on who's the next, but to me, she's the next Meryl Streep. Like, she's the next person who can do anything.
She's already,
and do it
yeah.
in an Oscar caliber.
She's already
every
just
time.
A classic Hollywood character or Hollywood.
Yeah.
actress. And you mentioned Arrival. I'll also echo that one. I don't really remember her much from The Fighter, but I do really like her in Doubt. And then I have yet to see Sharp Objects this year from HBO.
Oh yeah, we watched all of that. That was quite good. That's another one where she's, you know, it's almost lazy to say that someone's brave when they just are playing a character that doesn't look as good as you know that actress looks like. But she plays a cutter that's an alcoholic, and she is not real precious about the way that she looks in the show. And it's a tough show for her, and you know, you find out why throughout the show. But yeah, she's very good in that. That's quite a good show. It's very similar to Big Little Lies in terms of the way that it's structured, but it's a good one.
I can't wait. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check that out. But yeah, no, I mean, she's ready to kill in that scene, and I'm just so fascinated by really just the dynamics. I want to share with you another thing about the very end of the film, when leading up to this point, we know that Dodd has a son, Val Dodd, who's played by Jesse Plemons, and he's been a couple things recently.
Jesse Plemons, also known on the internet as Meth Damon, because
wow,
which is a terribly horrible thing to say.
It's pretty terrible. And Amber Childers plays his daughter Elizabeth, who is getting married to Clark on the boat when they first meet.
Right. Yep.
And later on, during some of the scenes or whatever, Elizabeth reaches over, I think, and starts to touch Freddie on the groin. Which, of course, she knows exactly what she's inviting by doing that to someone like him. So that's interesting there. Then you have the scene on the porch with Val saying that he's just making this up as he goes, and he's just really mad about it. And then Freddie attacks him and whatnot. He's almost like he's in these weird relationships with other children of Dodd's, like almost like as if Freddie is one of his children, you know, in a way. But the very end of the film, he meets Val. And he's the one that takes him to Lancaster's office in England. And there sits Peggy in Lancaster. And Freddie walks over and he starts talking to them. But then he asks, hey, where's Elizabeth? And I don't remember like what was said. It was like It was like, I had to look up what it was. But she says like an acronym. It was like, oh, it's a DSR or whatever. Something happened. You know, DSR. You know, that's what Amy Adams says. And I'm like, what the heck does that mean? And so I look it up and I type in like what I don't think it's DSR. It's some other acronym, DSR. I'm just making that up for the show, just for the story. And I type in that and the master. And apparently it comes from Scientology, where it's like called SP or something like that. I forget what the actual thing is, but it's separation. It's when the whole family unplugs and you are outcasted from your family because you have not gone clear. You no longer subscribe, to the teachings of Scientology and Dianetics and all that. So I think that was really fascinating too, that they just threw that in there and they just made up their own little term, their own term for them. But it was just a little bit of like extra bit there that just kind of made me, it just tickled in a good way. So, but yeah, no, I'm seeing a lot more like the master. I'm thinking, what does that mean? Like, they call him master because he teaches, you know, he's talking as if he is a prophet and stuff like that. But also it's like master and pet, like with Freddie and Lancaster. So it's also just like this weird, uncomfortable relationship that they have that often results in Freddie's violence because he can't seem to, I mean, he's just a failure, and that's kind of why we don't like watching him. I mean, he is, he's really hard to watch. And I think that's kind of, they kind of put them both together. And then separate them with a jail cell, and Freddy's just banging his head on the bed in there in the jail cell. He even breaks the dang toilet. That was crazy. Yeah,
that was another improvised thing where he didn't realize that was gonna actually break or anything.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's kind of crazy.
But it's that type of stuff that like that's why I guess I get into this, because it doesn't really matter that it doesn't say anything. It's just watching these, crazy entities try to pull off these like impossible feats because they're so, I mean, they're just, their ideas are just so stupid. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was one of the ones where I kind of watched, like I said, the second time around, I kind of watched it and wasn't really too worried about what it was amounting to while I was watching it. And once I got finished with the movie, it's like one of those weird things where I was like, huh, I don't know what I really thought about that, but I was glad that I wasn't trying to figure it out as I was going. Like, I was like, oh, good. I wasn't trying to, like, analyze it as I went. And I wasn't, like, I didn't take a lot of notes, really. And sometimes, like, I can tell if I'm not enjoying a movie because I'll take a ton of notes because that'll kind of distract me from what I'm not enjoying. You know, so I just have very slim notes, really. And I just put, you know, things like those interview scenes are so good. Those are things where in acting classes, here's a perfect dialogue scene for two people to act, right? Like, I wrote down things like that, like, oh, this is a really good example of how this is done, or I really like the portrayal of that. And I guess I just keep coming back to, while there are bits and pieces of the movie that I like, it just didn't amount to much for me. And it's one of those where, you know, maybe I'll give it another, like, a year or so or something and come back to it and, again, not try to figure it out, because I think that this may be an impenetrable film when it comes to, like, figuring it out. Like, what's the key that's going to unlock the movie? But I think just giving it another view after I've had a little time from it might be interesting to see sort of what I thought. And it's almost one of those where it's like, it's not that I feel like I'm wrong, but I'm like, wait a minute, what am I not getting? Like, what is it that a lot of people are appreciating that I can't quite get to? And that's almost a little frustrating for me because I'm like, it's not like that I want to go along with the crowd, but I'm like, well, a lot of people that I really respect like this movie, and it's, I get the nominations for the individual performances, but I'm like, this is a director where I've loved every one of his movies so far. This is, you know, obviously he wrote it too, but this is Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix and Amy Adams. Their performances are tremendous. So why can't I get on board with what this movie's doing? And I guess I just don't really have many answers for it.
I feel like you could take out all of the things that you're saying that have anything to do with The Master, and I feel like you could place that on Magnolia in some ways for me.
I just need
a few more times to watch it to really appreciate what he's doing. Because, like, my first time, I'm like, what is the point of all this? Why is he going through every one of these lives, and why is he showing it? And I'm like, none of it's necessarily bad. I just don't know what's being said. And I guess, sometimes it does take that extra bit of time for me to, like, really understand it. And at this point, I've only seen Magnolia once, you know, but I enjoyed it. But there's still something about it that's just not nearly as high as the highs that I'm used to with a PTA film. So when we're talking about The Master, I'm just kind of like, I'm not sure exactly why I have the feelings I have this time. I just really, really enjoyed seeing this house of cards all set up and then just get knocked down within the film. And the thing about it is it's filmed in this beautiful, 65 millimeter. I think it is more Johnny Greenwood. Johnny Greenwood. And also, just in the setting and the style, everyone looks like they're, like, I feel like they look the parts. Like, it's just, they fit so well. There's even some shots in this film I think are some of the best Paul Thomas Anderson shots of all time. There's a one-er that happens as Freddy is walking towards the boat, and it's very blue. It's dark and blue, and the boat is in the background, and it's just,
oh yeah,
and
that's, it's a very by. Famous. Are you talking about the one where with him being drunk on the top of the boat?
I mean, oh no. Oh, I'm sorry. That's at the very beginning of the film. I'm talking about after he's discharged from the Navy or whatever, from the bow, I guess, from the military, and he is walking at night towards Lancaster's boat.
And it's
very blue and it's very dark. And the only source of light is coming. It seems like the only source of light that is coming from the boat itself, and it's a wonder. And you follow Freddy down the boardwalk, all the way to the boat. But meanwhile, it is rack focusing between Freddy in the foreground, and then it will focus in on the boat. And at the very top of the boat, you can see perfectly framed Lancaster Dodd like dancing. And he's dancing with all these other people and celebrating and drinking and doing all sorts of stuff. But you can see him so well. And it's just, I don't know. There's something about that shot. Like, I can't really explain why, like, it's just, oh, here it comes. Like, oh, yeah, we're just waiting for these two to meet now. Like, here they are. You know, and he sneaks onto the boat. And then the next scene is just him waking up. And he's has a hangover. And forget who, one of his crew, or maybe
it's some dark-headed woman that I don't think we ever see again.
Yeah, she like discovers him and then reports him to Lancaster, who also is very probably hungover, and his introduction is just very like, it is just, you know, there's a pompousness to his introduction, the way he kind of introduces himself to Freddy. I don't know why he feels like he has to impress Freddy. Because, like, what you see is what you get with Freddy, because kind of sometimes he is just this, like, he's just this, like, snarling loser of a man. He's kind of an animal child type of character. And Lancaster is more like, I have to convince everybody that I am a very smart person. I am a writer. I am I'm a nuclear physicist. I'm a, what does he say?
Oh, he's got a whole list of things. Goes,
but
that
above
he says
all,
he is.
I am a man,
yeah.
And I am a very inquisitive man, like yourself. And he starts telling him all these things, and then ultimately starts this interview process that is just impressive to us because wow, that's a crazy acted scene. But also, it's impressed the dog because wow, I felt these things I've never felt before. He clearly has this power over me. I must learn to hone it as well. Like this feeling of like, oh, but clearly Lancaster is like holding it over his head and has this ability to, I don't know, to keep him thinking that he is partially in control of himself, you know, and keeps telling him like, what are you doing and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Yeah. You may have convinced me that this is still kind of in the hopper as more of a character sketch rather than a full on, you know, beginning to end film finished, like, you know, absolutely. I get it 100%, but I don't know. There's something still compelling about it that I can't seem to overlook. I love the scene with Laura Dern. When book two comes out, and she starts to question, well, when you ask us to imagine our past
instead of recall,
we're supposed to recall, you know, and he just like flips out at her because it's very similar to Plainview, where the moment you turn, it's just, you know, and the thing is, I can almost understand his outburst because on one side he's getting it from Peggy, his wife, who is probably pushing, we need to control them. We need to make sure that they don't question anything. But all these people in public just reach out to me and ask me in public, you know, Lancaster Dodd, hey, why is this way? Why I thought you said this, you know, in this other book. You know, there is a bit of pressure coming from others that, you know. So I don't know. I just think that...
Well, he doesn't like to be questioned in any sort of real way. Like, Freddy could question him, but Freddy's just an animal.
Right.
But if someone else that has some intelligence questions him, he loses his cool pretty quickly.
So I don't know if it's necessary, because you mentioned earlier, you're like, I think it's about Scientology. I don't think it's about Scientology at all. Like, it uses the same familiar
well,
Scientology
tropes. Yeah, I mean, Right, that's what I mean. Is Scientology in this sort of broad strokes, or just any sort of cult or religious sort of teachings, I guess, is right. what I mean by that.
I'm just fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by a cult and about how there is a family here. Clearly, they all stick together. I mean, they're all living in the same house for days on end, weeks on end or whatever. And they're all, seemingly going about their time. I don't think any of them have, like, jobs or anything like that. But Lancaster is just hanging out, trying to write his book. Book two will be out. And it's just a bunch of, I'm assuming, a lot of drivel, you know, and whatnot. But, you know, you got someone like a thug like Freddy there, and he does what he does, and they're able to manipulate him and turn him however they want. And then the moment he starts to fight back, the moment he starts to take his life a little bit more seriously, oh, now he's a threat. You know, oh, now he's starting to bite back. Now he's starting to get... So that conflict there, too. When he goes out to the desert to get his second book, the manuscript that's out there, you know, it's this really, it's the one shot that's in like nature almost, besides the desert when they're on motorcycles and stuff. But it's like that one shot, like he's worried about Freddy trying to steal and destroy him. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. I think that ultimately it's good that we finally didn't completely agree on a movie. And, again, I'm not trying to make you feel worse about the film. I think that there is some films where it's just kind of an ineffable thing where it's like, this movie worked for me. And I don't know if I could put my finger on it, but I freaking loved it. And if that's the case for you, then I'm happy for you.
I think that's exactly what happened. I think we literally just had the opposite reaction that we did for
Magnolia.
I like literally went, I can see how all these pieces are here and everything's accounted for. I just don't know what it is about it that makes me go, nope.
Yeah.
And then
it just, certain movies strike you at certain times, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
And that's part of the fun. I mean, if we agreed on every single movie every single time, it'd be like, well, yeah, these movies are great and talking about them's a lot of fun. But it's like my opinion isn't it's not like challenged. My opinion isn't changed, or it's like I'm not living in a little bubble to where everyone agrees with me all the time. Even though that would be wonderful because I'm super smart. So yeah, I think that it's kind of good that we didn't completely agree. And it'll be interesting to see what we think about our last two movies, because those are very divisive, from what I understand as well.
I'm looking forward to them because these are his like graduated films, and so now we're finally going to get the next, you know, the like seemingly this or when was this? 2012. Okay, so. He might have conceived of this maybe before the turn of the decade, but mm-hmm. now we're going to get like this decade's version of Paul Thomas Anderson and where he's at now. So I'm excited.
Yeah,
it
does make me a little nervous because, like I said, this is the first one that I didn't love. And then, my recollection is that Inherent Vice and Phantom Thread have not got the sort of fanfare that some of his earlier work has. And so it does make me a little nervous as to these last or most recent two as of recording.
Okay. So we'll see. Yep, we will. I'm excited.
We'll see. Well, anything else that you wanted to mention before we close this one out, Mr. Teed?
I have unlocked a secret. and it's very, very, very serious.
I love it.
And it's laughter. So, yeah.
It is laughter with very ginger eyebrows. You gotta have the very ginger eyebrows. That's like the only thing that I kept looking at during that scene.
Yes, he is. he's incredible.
He is an incredible actor, and it is too bad that was the last performance that we got with Paul Thomas Anderson. It's also too bad when you read things like it was at the rap party of this movie where. Him being not imbibing in the alcohol, and when he was clean for X amount of years, it was at this rap party is when he fell off the wagon.
Oh my god, which, that's horrible.
Yeah, which may have led to... Yeah, which, you know, it makes total sense in the way that this movie was because of his character, and that could have had nothing to do with it, but me reading into it after the fact and seeing what the character was drinking and that sort of thing and the way that the character was,
yeah,
I could see that that, you know, it would be easy to fall into, yeah, I'll have a drink, yeah, I'll give in to whatever, you know, my past demons, and then to, you know, to know about what happened to Philip Seymour Hoffman after the, you know, not too long really after this movie came out is it's a sad thing.
Man, that's terrible. Sad thing. I didn't know that. That's,
yeah. So I'm going to leave us on a downer. So if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, or if you have any other things that you want me to make you sad about, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle's @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me. I'm @ericwilliam79. We also have a Facebook page and an Instagram account. Just search for Plain Label Podcast and you'll find us over there. If you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could check out our show notes. You're going to find the link to our Amazon wish list and our Audible link, where, again, you can get something for free just by signing up. So, once again, Mr. Teed, even though I rained on your parade a little bit, I wanted to thank Mr. Teed for coming on. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in touch with you, where could they do that?
At Ben Teed on Letterboxd and Twitter. It's kind of the place where I put everything. Reviews. That's where you're probably going to find all the reviews, my star reviews that I, but like, you know, now that I put a star review, normally it stays that way. And then Eric comes along and says a few words in my ear. And then I question reality itself. And it always happens. Same. Every single time, every episode. I go, what do star I feel ratings this way? Mean? Do I? Who am That's I? Funny.
I will say, and we'll do this, in our next batch of recordings, but for our final movie, we'll do this. We'll look over the entirety of Paul Thomas Anderson's work and try to rate them. But I did 2.5 for The Master, Mr. T.
Whoa.
2.5. Whoa.
Well, I won't. I'm not going that
brutal.
Way. So there.
I know. I know you wouldn't. I knew you wouldn't. So anyway, so thank you for listening. And Ben and I will be back next week with a look at the film Inherent Vice.
No other love can warm my heart now that I've known the comfort of. No other love. Oh, the sweet contentment that I find with you every time, every time.